Fourth case this morning is Tunn v. Whitaker et al.
Matt Elliott on behalf of the defendants Jocelyn Whitaker and Judith Plass, Your Honors. As the court is aware, this is a Section 1983 case arising out of the brief expulsion of a student named Brandon Tunn for being involved in a nude photographing incident at Wayne High School.
Is this an expulsion or a suspension? What's the difference?
The school officials sought his expulsion. The principal sought his expulsion. The hearing officer said expulsion was appropriate. Ultimately, that was overturned administratively, though.
And well, I know that, but I mean, what's the difference between an expulsion and an expulsion for 3 months and a suspension for three months?
Well, in this case, Your Honor, it's probably a matter of semantics because there's no expulsion on his record. That doesn't appear on his permanent record in any way. It's probably better to say that the boy was off school for about 6 weeks due to the actions of the school
administrators. Well, that's relatively long. He was participating in sports, was he not? Wasn't he a wrestler?
He was off of wrestling during that time, Your Honor.
Right.
The wrestling season was over, to tell you the truth. These incidents happened just at the end of the wrestling season. He was prevented from going to a school dance, I think, during that time frame. But other than that, he was just basically off of school. As I indicated, he did prevail administratively. Not satisfied with that remedy, he's brought suit on a variety of theories, most of which were rejected by the district court. He did prevail on his substantive due process theory. We appealed, and that's why we're here. As an initial matter, I think it's important to note that it's undisputed, at least in my mind, that there's some evidence that Brandon was actually involved in this incident and was not just a pure victim of being photographed. We've laid out that evidence pretty exhaustively in our brief. The foreign exchange student's statement standing alone says, basically, the boys asked me to do it, so I did it. That in itself is sufficient evidence to show that he was an active participant, plus the fact that he was found giggling over the photographs. He didn't report the incident to anybody. All these things show that he wasn't, in fact, angered by it or a victim of it, but that he was involved, or at least someone could conclude that way.
Well, it does appear as they're doing what, in many instances, what teenage boys that age will do. The decision was ultimately overturned on review, wasn't it?
That's right, Your Honor. It was overturned, and that reflects the fact that people can have differences of opinion with regard to whether conduct is violative of a rule or not. Some people within the school itself had kind of a boys will be boys attitude about it. Others thought it was more serious, perhaps recognizing the fact that, you know, when you have an instance of nude photographs, especially in the modern world, it's a pretty dangerous situation because those things can be duplicated via scanner and emailed to everyone under the sun.
Yeah, but this was just a bunch of boys in a locker room and it never got out.
Well, it did get out in the sense that the foreign exchange student asked or said in his written statement that the boys asked for the photographs, and so that's why he gave them to Brandon, and that's how Brandon was ultimately found with the photographs. The teacher found Brandon, in turn, pretty much right after he got them. So we don't know what was going to happen to the photographs after that.
Yeah, but nothing did happen.
That's true. It was nipped fairly closely in the bud. The question is, can a school official look at that situation and say, we've got to take a strong stand against it to discourage students from getting involved in that kind of conduct? I mean, do you want your students monkeying around with a camera and nudity in the school?
Well, it might have a different case if it was non-consensual, but everything here, it was consensual.
Well, that's true, Your Honor, but let's take a case where you have a boyfriend-girlfriend situation, and the boyfriend takes naked pictures of his girlfriend in the school locker room, which is not that much different than this case. That's a consensual scenario also, and I think that school officials have a very strong interest in preventing that from happening because, especially when you deal with kids whose judgment isn't that great, they may decide to do the wrong thing with those photographs, and they may get out, or they may break up in the boyfriend-girlfriend scenario, and they get out in public after that. It's just not the kind of conduct that school officials want happening in their buildings. And, you know, it goes to the point that we've made throughout our briefs, and that's evident in the case law on these issues, that the federal courts have typically given school officials a pretty wide latitude in deciding what discipline is appropriate within their hallways. And there's a good reason for that. That's because school officials are there every day. They see what happens. They know what can happen if steps aren't taken. And so, you know, giving school officials the appropriate degree of latitude, it seems to me that what Platts and Whitaker did here doesn't even approach shocking the conscience, which is, of course, the standard that we're operating under.
What, did all three or all four boys receive the same discipline?
Yes, they did. They all received the same discipline.
And they all appealed?
And they all, well, I don't know if all of them appealed or not. I think all, yes, I do think they did all appeal because I believe they were represented all by the same attorney. And they were all treated the same in that regard. Not all of them brought suit. Of course, you know, if this case stands, they all may bring suit. And that's one reason why we're here. They pretty much got a slam dunk win if this case gets through. It seems to me there's two levels of legal inquiry here. One is whether the school officials, in light of the conduct that happened, needed a rule to act. That's the threshold question. And the second level is whether they acted appropriately given the rule that they actually did rely on.
It doesn't, I mean, it really doesn't fit either of the two that they used, wasn't it? Pornography and I've forgotten what the other one was.
Well, it's inappropriate sexual behavior is the one rule.
But it doesn't really fit those, does it?
Well, you know, granted, the case would be a lot better if the rule said you can't take nude photographs in school. But again, school rules are not required.
Well,
to
you said maybe you didn't need a rule.
That's true. And I can address that point first, Your Honor. As a matter of state law, Indiana law, schools are required to come up with disciplinary rules and then follow those disciplinary rules when they mete out discipline. It seems to me that as a matter of federal constitutional law, you're not bound by those same rules. I mean, this court has said many times that a violation of state law standing alone is not necessarily a violation of federal law or Section 1983. And it seems to me that if you have conduct that's close to the line or that would be totally ambiguous, you know, like chewing gum, if that's not provided for in a rule and the schools decide to expel somebody, well, you might have a procedural due process claim based on notice there, not a substantive due process claim. But where you have evidence that kids are involved in conduct that I think any teacher or any student or any parent would say was inappropriate, clearly inappropriate, then I think that as a matter of federal constitutional law, it does not shock the conscience for a school to act on that, even if there isn't a specific rule on point. You know, the school might not have any rules whatsoever. Does that mean that a school is prohibited from disciplining whatsoever under the federal constitution? Not under the substantive due process clause, I don't think. And if just to take the example and follow up on what I spoke to earlier, which is the boyfriend-girlfriend case, you know, under the district court's theory of this case and the plaintiff's theory of this case, the schools could not discipline students who were engaged in that conduct because that, too, would not fall under Rule 22 or Rule 24. And therefore, the Platts and Whitaker would be powerless to stop that conduct also. And I think that's the type of conduct that school officials should be allowed to stop.
What is the appeal process once the administrator made the decision to expel or discipline? How's that process?
Well, it's almost like the principal acts as almost a prosecutor in that setting, Your Honor. There's a hearing at which they can be represented by counsel, and they were here. That hearing took place before Judith Platts, who was the hearing officer, who was also a defendant. And, you know, the hearings are an hour long, thereabouts, and they can present whatever they want to present.
Is this a school board appointed hearing officer?
Well, that's her job, right, Your Honor.
Well,
this is what she typically does. The appeal is a regular official in the student services department at the school. He's a regular employee. He handles most of the appeals. He's the one who handled the appeal in this case. He looks at the record. He takes whatever additional evidence people want to offer, and he throws it in the mix and decides. And there's another level of appeal after that, actually. You can appeal to the school board itself.
Okay.
They didn't have to do that here because they won at the intermediate level.
Is that appeal automatic, or do you have to?
The school board appeal, I think, is restricted to new evidence or some other factor. But, you know, as a you can still appeal. It's just whether they give you the right to a hearing depends on whether
one appeal is a matter of right, which is the first one to the officer, hearing officer.
Correct.
And then it's discretion, discretion with the school.
The hearing officer is the first stage. You have an appeal as a right to the intermediate stage, and then there's another appeal to the school board, which is restricted to whether you have new evidence or not, things along those lines. I guess I'm out of time.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court, my name is Jeff Smith, and I'm the attorney for Brandon Tunn. The reason that Judge Cosby's decision was correct is because allowing oneself to be photographed in a school locker room shower does not constitute inappropriate sexual behavior.
What short of what happened here, expulsion and all that, what could the school have done that would have been short of a violation of your client's rights?
Well, I think the problem here is that since there was no sexual behavior there and there was no evidence of sexual behavior, the expulsion was violative of his due process rights. There are other rules that they probably could have applied in this particular case that would have been less onerous as far as discipline.
Well, sure, I can think of a lot of things they could have done less, but I'm asking you, what could they have done that would have just got to the line but not crossed over? Could they kick them off the wrestling team?
I think they could have kicked them off the wrestling team, but there again, this wasn't the appropriate rule to apply to this situation.
So then you're saying they couldn't have kicked them off the wrestling team?
Not under, maybe not under this rule.
What rule would you think would apply to this situation?
Well, for instance, there's Rule 9 in the Behavior Code. Rule 9 talks about disruption. And as was discussed in counsel's reply brief, the kids were engaged in horseplay. Okay, under the disruption rule, engaging in horseplay is something that violates the rule, and expulsion is not one of the disciplinary actions under that rule.
Could be suspended for 2 weeks for that, or
under the rule, I'm not sure if that would be appropriate under
now
this
tell,
particular.
Tell me
rule.
About this appeal. You know, that's I'm very concerned about that because it seems to me this is essentially a temporary determination, which is taken up on appeal and reversed. So is that conscience-shocking?
Well, I think it is.
You allow the machinery to operate and it does justice in the end?
Well, I think it is, Your Honor, because in this case, he lost 6 weeks of school. He lost some extracurricular activity. He lost the opportunity to be educated in the classroom setting. He also had a liberty interest that was damaged as a result of this to his reputation. He goes back to school after the 6 weeks off. Everyone knows what has happened. And
imagine he's a hero when he comes back to school, isn't he?
Maybe in some situations.
He
beats
the system, I would think.
But Judge Cuddy's question, perhaps this one. What could they have suspended him for a day?
Yeah, I think they could have suspended him for a day before they gave him the hearing. But the problem with this case and the problem that, and what Judge Cosby found or agreed with us was that there was no evidence that he violated the particular rule with which he was charged of violating. And that's the primary problem.
Is there, under the law that governs Indiana school situations, there has to be a rule that you violate? There can't be just general determination by administrator that's conduct that deserves to be sanctioned?
Yeah, I don't know that that's necessarily the case. I don't know that that's necessarily the case. But in this particular situation, the rule that they charged him with was not a rule that was violated. There was no evidence.
Did they have a right to confiscate the photograph?
Certainly. The photos did not belong to my client.
Well, it belonged to one of the kids. The kid
actually,
the camera.
Well, actually, the film belonged to the school because it was filmed
from photography
from
class?
A photography class. Yes.
Oh. What if it was? Put that aside. What if it was just a kid brought a camera in and picture phone or something and took a picture of these little wrestlers?
Yeah. Well, I certainly have a problem with them confiscating that type of information or those types of photos. But you know, it's not really the situation that we've had here, this was photography class photographs, so I don't have a problem with that. I do have a problem with the fact that they developed the photos and then they shared them with other administrators and officers so that they could see the boys in the situation that they were in. But the reason in this particular case that it was abusive of his due process rights was that there was deliberate indifference in this case. The rule is inappropriate sexual behavior, including public indecency on school property. The rule doesn't define what that means. It doesn't define what inappropriate sexual behavior means. But I think that under Indiana law, sexual behavior doesn't consist of mere nudity. There's a statute that talks about what sexual conduct is, and typically that includes sexual intercourse, self-gratification, that type of thing. That's not what we had here. We had nudity. So if you look at the public indecency statute, while that may prohibit public nudity, in this case there wasn't any public nudity. What we had here was a situation where the boys were in the shower, the locker room shower, where they were entitled to be. They were showering nude, which is really the only way you can get it done. And to say that that was a public place, as Judge Cosby pointed out, would make anyone who visits the YMCA locker room potentially criminally responsible.
Well, at least as posed or photographed, it wasn't totally nude either, was it?
Excuse me?
It wasn't totally nude as photographed or posed.
That's correct, Your Honor. The genitals were covered, and that's another reason why I wouldn't consider this sexual, inappropriate sexual behavior, and it doesn't fit within the statute. I think the common understanding, throwing aside the statute, the common understanding of sexual behavior would not include simply being nude in a locker room, and that's the situation that we had here.
A qualified immunity issue, it seems to be substantial here. Has the Supreme Court ever reversed school disciplinary action since the Tinker case, which is the armband case, which I think is the original case in this area? Is there any other Supreme Court law that would put anybody on notice that they might be overstepping the ground by imposing too severe a penalty?
Right. I'm not sure when the Tinker case was decided, but I think
it was a Vietnam War case.
Okay. Well, Wood versus Strickland was a Supreme Court case where they reversed a court of appeals decision on a school discipline issue. And in that case, what happened was the school board, there was a rule that prohibited the use of intoxicating beverages, and in that case, they had used some girls had brought some malt liquor to school and poured it in a punch bowl, and they said that the malt liquor was not an intoxicating beverage under the statute as the defined intoxicating beverages. But the Supreme Court did reverse that case and said you ought to go ahead and let the school administrators construe that statute. But intoxicating beverages...
Well, they didn't reverse the school discipline then.
Right, they upheld the school discipline.
They reversed the court.
Right, reversed the Court of Appeals, yeah.
So, I mean, what clearly established law, therefore, is there here that would put these administrators on notice that they could be... that overly severe penalty could be unconstitutional.
Right. Here, the situation is this. We have no evidence that there was a violation of this particular rule. All we have is a fellow who allowed himself to be photographed, and that's not evidence of inappropriate sexual behavior. Because of that, we do have Supreme Court law that says, look, you can't charge and convict and punish someone when there's no evidence to support the charge, conviction, and punishment. And that no evidence rule, and that was in the Thompson versus City of Louisville case, that no evidence rule has been applied by other district courts to the school disciplinary context. And so in this particular case, a reasonable person would know that it would be violative of your constitutional rights, your due process rights, to charge them with a rule for which there's no evidence that he violated. Any person, I think, would understand that that's established law. And in this case, Judy Platts and Jocelyn Whitaker would have known that. I see my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement, and we move to the